on this episode of Edge of the Web.
Your competition has gotten smarter and they're all targeting, they all figured out the same targeting you did. So like everyone started creating a 1% lookalike off of people that purchased.
Right.
So everyone that you're targeting is probably in like 50 different targeted ad sets. So you, even at that micro level, it's just gotten super competitive.
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests. You're listening and watching Edge of the Web. Winners of Best Podcast from the Content Marketing Institute for 2017. Hear and see more at edgeofthewebradio.com. Now, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
We want to introduce our listeners to Susan. If you and for our listeners, if you hadn't heard our interview with Susan a while back, go check that out because it was really fun. We had a great time. She is the VP of Marketing Strategy over at AimClear. She also oversees integrated paid marketing strategies for AimClear accounts, represents AimClear by writing and speaking on tactics, strategy, and case studies of solutions that they've been able to implement for their clients. She's also been a speaker and a columnist who speaks at industry events and company events, including SMX, PubCon, Digital Summit Series, Bright On SEO, PPC HeroConf, State of Search, and other events. So Susan has been an incredible contributor into the education space of marketing in general, digital marketing in specific, social marketing even more specific. And we certainly appreciate her coming back on board to share some words of wisdom. Susan, thanks so much.
Absolutely. I'm happy to be here. Interesting. Excellent. To do it like a little over a year since I was there, how much has changed. So the timing was great.
and we also touched base with you here because you just gave a presentation over at SMX Advanced to be able to talk about social media ads and what's changing them in the ecosystem here. But first and foremost, can you tell our listeners your backstory of how you got involved into digital marketing?
Absolutely. I actually started at CircuitCity.com. Rest in peace. It's no longer there.
But that was a great store, man. That was a great store.
I know. I started there as a writer, and I didn't know anything about websites. Like, I had no clue how they worked. I didn't know what SEO was. So I kind of got my feet wet there, and I was promoted to an editor, and I started working on the content for their email marketing. Mm-hmm. And it, like, blew my mind. You could see how many people opened the email and how many people clicked and what they clicked on, and I was hooked. Like, from the second that I discovered that, I was like, forget writing. I want to do marketing. So I actually wound up taking over the retention email campaign. Mm-hmm. So it was worth, like, $65 million in revenue. I was, like, 26.
Oh, wow.
It was like the Wild West days where they're like, it's this weird e-commerce stuff. We'll just give it to the kids.
this newfangled thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I got to do all kinds of cool stuff, like launch their first abandoned cart email and run their newsletter content and all that stuff. So that was where I started. During that time, I started getting like pings from places that wanted freelance work. And they were asking if I knew anything about those ads that appeared on Google. Mm. And I really didn't, but it was a perfect melding of my background because it was words and writing and marketing metrics. So I started messing around with it and found out I was good at it. And I really enjoyed learning about search intent and, you know, conversion rate optimization and why people click on what they do and why they buy what they buy. So I focused pretty heavily in that for a lot of years. And actually, when I first started speaking, that was what I spoke about. Mm-hmm. And then I took a job where I had to learn Facebook advertising, and this was back in 2014, 2013. So it was
the early days of Facebook ads.
Yeah, it was so much easier. So I had to learn about that. And I found that even more interesting because it brought in that creative angle that I was really missing on the paid search side, because it was just all text ads.
Right.
And so I loved that there was like imagery and copy, and Facebook is one of the things they do really well is iterate those ad units to, you know, really get attention and understand how users interact with things.
Right.
So I just kind of went all in on that because there weren't a lot of experts out there that were really good at it. And I just found it super interesting. So that was where I started focusing my time. But I did a lot of paid search and integrated stuff for all kinds of brands, a few different agencies. I was solo for a while. When I talked to you guys last year, I was operating as a consultant for a bit.
Yep.
So kind of done a little bit of everything. I've been in-house and agency, and paid media has just always kind of been where I felt the most comfortable. So, and I just think it's getting more and more interesting. Like, more and more people are finding it hard, and I'm like, no, this is where it gets good. This is the fun part. So I'm enjoying the challenge.
But I mean, to your credit, we're seeing a very, very, a nuanced cobble industry of specialists in these particular ad platforms. So you don't have to be now a jack of all trades in the ad space. In fact, it can actually be a detriment if you're not really dialing in to a particular platform. And that's what you did. And you've been doing that for a number of years on the Facebook side. And that's where there's almost like this thermal layer of creativity and productivity that you have social ads kind of touching the surface of some ROI, some success. You can get another layer there of remarketing, what have you. But if you really dial it in, I mean, you only should be specializing in that and it comes with a huge bounty as soon as you get that focus, right?
Yeah. And I think the thing is too, is it's like the only reason why I feel like I feel pretty equally adept at paid search and Facebook ads, but the only reason is because I started as long ago as I did.
Right.
If I was starting today, I wouldn't be able to learn more than one platform, probably. It's just too hard. I mean, they all have so many nuances. And even on the paid search side, there's still things that change that I learn about it like a few weeks later than I probably would have a few years ago, just because I'm in the Facebook piece so much. But I don't know how anybody could jump in and be an expert in all of them at this point. They all have different strengths, different quirks, you know, different creative formats, just all of it's so different from channel to channel. It's really hard to know all of them very well.
You're absolutely right. But there does need to be kind of not only appreciation, but there has to be a reference to cross-platform attribution, because your consumer's not just in Facebook. Your consumer is going to be interacting with all the other mediums, all the other advertising platforms. So there has to be consistency across the board. And that's part of what you were talking about in your SMX presentation. So catching up with you, your presentation was Smarter Selling with Facebook Ads 2019 and Beyond. So what happened in the world of social media ads? I thought the gold rush was still happening and successful ROI was soaring. What happened?
So there are a few things that happened. With Facebook ads, they ran out of inventory in their newsfeed a couple years ago now. And so they had warned advertisers like, hey, there's no more. So they've been trying to, innovate around that. And acquiring Instagram was probably the best move they ever made. Yeah. That's really helped with that problem. But they've tried to kind of create pockets, like there's ad units in Messenger and there's ad units in Marketplace. So they're making these small gains where they're trying to offset the inventory problem. So the inventory has been an issue, but the other thing that's happened is that there's always this tendency. And I mean, it was like this with paid search in the early days, that when there's a new paid platform and competition is low, it's very easy for it to be like the magic jackpot machine where you put in money and you get money out. And it is not that difficult to do because there's just not a lot of competition. So it wasn't as hard to win in Facebook ads because most businesses kind of really didn't know how to do them well. Their creative sort of sucked. And so if you just had, a few steps to gain ahead of a competitor, you'd do great. The problem is now people have gotten really smart about what works on Facebook, what doesn't. They're innovating a lot faster. So the competition has ratcheted up times a million. So you've got this environment where there's humongous demand. There is static supply. Your competition has gotten smarter and they're all targeting. They all figured out the same targeting you did. So like everyone started creating a 1% lookalike off of people that purchased.
Right.
So everyone that you're targeting is probably in like 50 different targeted ad sets. So you, even at that micro level, it's just gotten super competitive. So it's just been a challenge. I think we really started to notice it like last spring. Things that had operated very reliably started to have major erosion, especially in the e-commerce space.
Oh, wow.
We started to see things that had always been like mid 300s in return on spend dropping to like mid 200s, low 200s. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So the thing is, though, is that I think part of the problem is that people were used to much faster sales. And I think that's the third part of the equation is that because there was less competition, people were like, oh, cool product, I'll buy that. Well, now they're seeing 50 cool products a day on Facebook. And they're like, whoa, they're getting blind to it.
Yeah.
So cycles are taking a lot longer than they used to because you're kind of stepping over all these competitors to get the person to recognize your product. So you're having to talk to them so much longer and for so much more frequently that advertisers and brands haven't adjusted their patience level for that. So, it's like they run something. They're like, we ran it for a week and it didn't work. And it's like, yeah, but it worked within a week a year ago, but now it's not, you have to run it like 2 to 3 times as long. So we just have this short attention span and the short patience because we got really spoiled by how well it worked out of the gate.
Yep.
And now that it doesn't, people just kind of assume it doesn't work at all, but it's just about expectation management.
Well, I want to talk about the maturity of the marketing, the marketing departments of in general, different marketing brands. But before that, I want to talk about the users. The users, us all being users, there's been an evolution, right? There's been a true change of guard, so to speak, is that users are like you said, they're getting saturated with so much information. But you talk about user burnout and ad blindness. So we've got users that are, you know, they'll have their own favored platform, and they're getting inundated and burnt out on ads. And on top of that, they're getting burnt out on ads from marketing that don't change, that don't go deeper into their own buyer's journey, right?
Yeah.
But are they also getting burnt out because of all the other ad platforms that are just getting inundated now that they're seeing so much of a glut of advertising that anything that, again, like you said, was effective on a particular platform, you have these additional variables of other ad platforms that were kind of in their own space, all clouding and numbing that user now.
Yeah, and tied to that, I think the other thing that you see a lot of that ends up permeating all the platforms is someone will figure out something like, you know, when the first person figured out that, hey, emojis work well for click-through rate, and that stuff spreads around, yeah. And because someone sees a case study, and so then everyone starts doing it, and everyone starts using Bitly links in the body copy instead of the headline. And it's, you know, there's all these small things that even video styles. I mean, you'll start seeing, you know, there was like for a while, and I think they're kind of fading out, but you'd have like the bar on the top, the bar on the bottom. There'd be the video in the middle, and there'd be like emojis and a headline. You know, it's like even the formats of the videos of how they did the creative started to all look the same between all the advertisers, because they'd be like, they'd look at what their competitor was doing,
right,
and say, "Ooh, we should be doing that." And then it just, it's like this ripple effect where they all start doing it.
It's like FOMO in marketing.
It totally is. And so it just ends up being, you know, where people can't even distinguish between brands because they're all using the same type of creative.
Yep.
They're going to all these different platforms and still seeing the same type of creative. So there's just this dilution of brands because they're all so busy focusing on what the other one is doing.
Okay. And that means that there's no true marketing strategy. It's just mirroring what you're seeing out there. So you're paying attention to your competitor, and that's no guarantee that that's actually working for them.
I'm like, you don't know that it's working for them.
It's like freaking lemmings, right? They're all falling off the cliff.
And I was talking to a friend in the industry this morning, and we were saying one of the things that I think still really plagues paid media managers is that there can be this expectation with brands that if they just throw money at it, it'll fix it. And the fact of the matter is, if you don't have a good marketing plan and you don't have a long-term vision for how you're going to build brand recognition, you'll never get off the paid media treadmill. You will always be beholden to what your return on spend did this day or this week, because you don't have anything building a foundation that's going to go longer for you.
Right.
And that's one of the things that we're very big on measuring at InClear, is we're big believers, because we have the data and we've done it, of showing what staying present in social in front of a brand will do to things like your brand search and your direct traffic, because there are these halo signals that happen when you stay in front of users. It's no different than TV commercials or anything else. It's the same idea where, but we're so conditioned to brands thinking that paid media has to be this direct response medium, and that's all it's good for.
Right.
It's still a very old school way of thinking. And so that's been something that we focused on super heavily, is building out the data capabilities and our ability to report on those things, so that clients understand, like, this is incrementally what is happening to your brand, because we've just seen so many brands end up failing or just, again, becoming beholden to what the algorithm does that day. It's just not a way to build a long-term business.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to unpack that maturation model for businesses. But the last point I want to ask about users is that, are users now pushing away from like a hard push call to action? Are they looking for that brand relationship more?
I feel like they are. And the reason I say, and this is anecdotal again, I mean, this is, you know, Susan's scientific gut theory,
which
is not really scientific. But what's interesting is that you still see good engagement on things that aren't necessarily hard selling. So especially that kind of squishy middle of the funnel area where it's like they've been to your site, they're probably not ready to buy yet. But if you have really compelling content in the meantime to stay in front of them, we see really great, strong engagement with that. And in fact, one of the things I still see work very well on Facebook is to optimize for engagement first and then remarket to people that engaged with your content or your ad unit. That actually still is a funnel that works really well for me. But it also capitalizes on the fact that you're staying in front of these people for very low cost. Because the other problem you run into is if every campaign you run is optimizing towards a conversion, it's a super expensive CPM. I mean, yeah, that's the most expensive media that Facebook's got. And it's not always the most effective. I mean, you're asking Facebook to kind of guess like, hey, who's going to buy my thing within 28 days or whatever your attribution window is. So the nice thing about some of the other, you know, campaign types are that they get that user along on that buying path. It's just that it's misaligned with how brands want to measure. They still keep wanting to measure, did it have return on spend this day or within 3 days? But if you look at the actual things like engagement metrics, they still do very well. So people will still interact and watch stuff. It's just, there's just this hyper focus still on direct response that I think takes away from the role that those things play.
All right. So let's get into that. Let's talk about how marketing teams can mature that, because you're missing so much if you're just looking at the conversion model. So you talk about brand lift. And I'm wondering, are we still, a little editorial comment, I still think we're actually binary marketers like you're talking about. It's black or white. It's they're either in the bucket or they're not, right?
Yes.
So are we able to expand or embrace our view of marketing data to view this behavioral analysis? Because what you're really talking about is mapping user behavior in particular archetypes that you can rely on, right?
Yes.
And all of the different mediums have different trigger points, different key, key performance indicators, but it's removed from that transaction. They're still making transactions. They're making these micro transactions.
Yes.
And you know, there has to become some consistency of how we actually measure that as well. There was a Sprout Social study of a number of different marketers, and they said that majority of the marketers actually, 72% count a social media post, likes, or comments as engagement, and 62% include shares or retweets. About 60% of the count interaction with consumers, they counted that as social media engagement, but across platforms, they weren't seeing the same things. So we got to get our game straight of even how to measure that behavioral set of triggers, right?
Yeah, and I think the thing is too, is that because each platform does things well differently, having an understanding of what each one does well, but making sure you follow that user as they go to other places is super important. So the example that I usually give is like, the LinkedIn world is so expensive, right? Everyone's like, oh my God, it's like cost prohibitive, it's so expensive.
Right.
That's one of those platforms where I'm like, if all you do is measure it by whether, you know, you sold your enterprise level software from it, you're never going to find an ROI. And so people are like, yeah, but still it costs, you know, like $30 a click. But what's funny is that those are usually the same advertisers where they never talk to those people again.
Right.
They're like, I spent this money and they didn't download my white paper. I'm like, so you didn't remarket to them anywhere. You didn't. And I think some of it's just kind of overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I really encourage digital marketers to do is just UTM the tag the hell out of everything. Like just UTM everything to death. And even if you don't use it or you do, like LinkedIn's a great example. If I'm going to pay $30 to send someone to my site, I just bought some really great data. Like I know their job title. I know what industry they work in. There's so much I know about them that I don't know in Google Analytics. So if I UTM tag them, I'm going to pop right into Facebook and I'm going to create a custom audience with the UTM tagging. Because then as they come into Facebook, I know exactly what to show them. I know if they're a decision maker. I know what they care about. So there's all this data too, like you kind of said, where it's not just what they do, but how you're able to target the user, that each platform kind of does each thing really well. But if you don't leverage it across them, you're still going to be stuck in these separate sandboxes that don't talk to each other. And you're going to be like, well, LinkedIn doesn't work. And it's like, yeah, it does, but it's a 6-month selling cycle. So you have to figure out how to tag these people and be present in other places for them.
So you're
I feel like that's one of the biggest missing pieces.
Absolutely. Right now. Absolutely. And for those playing at home, if you don't know what UTM tagging, we certainly have a number of shows regarding that, but it's literally you're categorizing your content, categorizing your message, categorizing the medium. So you can then have that type of research. And that's a very good statement. You're not buying that user transaction, you're buying their data. And that's an incredibly valuable, as long as you have the ability to siphon that off and position that in, not only back into that same advertising campaign, but also having it structured that you can pick it up and translate that almost like an XML gateway to be able to push it over to another platform, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's one of the things that we've looked at too, is when people are like, gosh, Facebook took away all this great targeting. Yeah, but programmatic still has it, you know? So it's like you need to adapt. So is the creative as compelling on programmatic? No, but you're able to get such a specific subset of people that if you could make your creative just interesting enough to get them to click through, now you've got them. Now you can retarget them on Facebook. You can retarget them on Pinterest. You can retarget them wherever because you UTM tag them. So if you can go into it knowing two things, one is that your job is to build remarketing pools. Like that is your job as a marketer.
Amen.
You are to build remarketing. That is what you do. Yeah. And then secondly, just know that the money you're spending, some of it's to buy data, and that's what's going to bring you success later. It's, you know,
you're investing in yourself. Absolutely.
The pressure of like, did we hit goals today? It's like, you will, but it's going to get so much easier later if you treat this as a data buying exercise first.
You mentioned in your presentation, the other factors of brand lift that you should measure: direct traffic, paid brand traffic explicitly. But there's also other factors to be aware of. And that's the reading time, right? On a page. If you're rolling out polls or surveys, the returning visitor, right?
Yes.
Making sure that you're paying attention to that, because not only from a remarketing standpoint, but those are brand signals that you're doing something right. But ultimately, all comes back down to the destination, which is the content on that page, the creativity and the messaging and the utilitarian aspect. Is this useful for that consumer? Because if they're still getting a hard push, right? You're breaking all of that learning system because you didn't think through what that final brand communication
what they care
was.
About.
Yeah. So shifting the campaign, and then you really rolled into the creative being at the heart of everything. This is what we're kind of going into here. Creating compelling creative, and that's also, I think you probably are of the same opinion, that's one of the areas that are the least invested sometimes from the A/B testing and the change of messaging to meet those buyers where they are. It's almost like, okay, we've done a typical creative and it didn't work, therefore we'll just change the entire concept, right?
So yeah, and I think some of that comes from the fact that a lot of agencies that are running this stuff, they're heavy in media buying. They're not necessarily heavily in creative. So I think sometimes it's a struggle because the person that's managing your paid media might be amazing at numbers and, you know, the kind of the more tedious technical aspects, but they might not be a creative person. So that can create, I think, angst a lot, because if they just have limited creative ideas and they push them out and they don't work, then it's kind of like, okay, is the medium just not working? Is our targeting wrong? And almost every time a lot of us say this, it's like, when you just get the creative right, you're going to find that your targeting is probably correct. If it's not working, it's usually not a targeting thing. It's usually a messaging and creative piece. But it's not something that's really been, you know, built into us because we didn't have to for a really long time. And, you know, I think there's a big distinction between people that are kind of the more soft and feeling and creative type marketers versus the people that are the media buyers. But a lot of times we're called upon to do both jobs. And that's a challenge.
And I mean, at the core of this, all marketers, wherever you are on the creative side or the media buying, have to incorporate their inner data scientist. They have to pull that in. So from a creative standpoint, you got to be able to UTM the different aspects of your art, different aspects of your creative. Otherwise, you can't tell the difference of what's happening. It just falls like a thunk because you were looking at some sort of conversion metric and you weren't looking at what the signals were from your audience, right?
Exactly. And what you're expecting the creative to do. I mean, it's, you know, people, like, they'll run video and be like, oh, we ran this video and it didn't sell anything. But then you look at the watch stats, you're like, but people watched 100% of it. It did its job. You know what I mean? It's like they're relying on the creative sometimes to do more than it's capable of doing on its own. Kind of like, you know, relying on a single ad to just sell your stuff when no one's ever heard of you. It's the same thing, you know? So you're kind of like, no, the video actually did its job, but you have to follow up appropriately because you got their attention. But it's, there's just this expectation. It's like, well, I got their attention and they didn't buy. It's like, right. You're going to have to ask them a few times.
Yeah. Do a few more steps. I mean,
yeah.
Are you going to buy? I mean, just put yourself in the consumer's shoes, right? As a rarity, except when there's like Batman product, because I'll buy it in a heartbeat, but it's a rarity.
We all have those weaknesses. That's
we
just,
really
that's
do.
The right
I mean,
time thing, you know?
It's a vice.
The right time.
I could have worse vices, but right. I mean, literally, how often are you going to buy right there from that video? It
right.
goes into
probably
your consideration up. Pile, right?
Right?
So you see that Roomba and you see the other three possible Roombas that you're thinking about buying because you really want to, you know, get the house clean, right? So you're not going to buy right there. You're still going to be comparing them, probably come back to that video multiple times. That's why you can save videos in Facebook, guys.
Right. And that's also why the UTM piece of it's so important, because then you go into something like Google Ads where, you know, if I go into analytics and I create, you know, separate audiences based on what they viewed on Facebook and what they were targeted, and then I pull them in as remarketing audiences on the search side, I have great visibility into these people went on to search these things and I bid more on them because I know they already saw my video. So I want to stay present. There's just basic cross-channel stuff like that, that I think part of it's hard because sometimes it's not the same team managing it. I mean, you know, there are a lot of instances where brands will have one, you know, one set of places managing the search, one set of places managing the paid social. Sometimes they're trying to compete for the same ad dollars. Like there's a lot of reasons why those things don't get done. Sometimes it's an internal thing where they're just siloed. Like the paid social lives with the social people and paid search is over here and nary do the two meet. But that's really where the true power is. Like that's really where we see brands start firing on all cylinders is when they really integrate that stuff. So it's difficult when it's just like a, you know, a politics issue or a people problem. Cause you're like, you're standing in the way. Like you have the Holy Grail. You have all this traffic on both sides, but you're just not putting all the pieces together.
Yeah, you have to connect the dots and be able to talk to each other and share that data, because you're capitalizing on the learning model. And we've talked about machine learning here on the show, a number of different shows. And that's part of that, is mapping your learning model so you can leverage the machine learning tools, right? And you have to be able to all speak from that data scientist mindset, creative or otherwise. You got to dig in there. You said in your presentation, brands and agencies cannot execute it, that can't execute and be nimble on creative will not survive in Facebook and the Instagram landscape.
Yep, I am a big believer in that. It's happening already, where it's, you know, things like. And we're still seeing really good, pretty instant results with Instagram stories. Shout out to Andrew Foxwell, who's just super brilliant. He's so amazing at this stuff. And he actually helped me with Instagram stories, because I'm like, I don't get them. I feel like I'm old, but like how I, you know, I was struggling to create decent ads in them. And he took the time to go through it with me. And like the second I did, I immediately started seeing results.
Oh, wow.
But the thing is, A, they're time consuming. So they do take longer to create than a newsfeed ad, and they give great results, but they do burn out quickly. So you have to be ready to change them out. So there's a time consumption piece that goes along with that. So when I say that they have to be able to adapt and be nimble, it's like, A, they have to have the creativity, but B, they have to be ready to like pretty rapid fire execute it. Because as soon as something starts failing, they have to have something ready in the hopper to push back out. Cause it, you know, from what I'm seeing, the story stuff will last for about a week and a half, and then you start seeing a decline.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's pretty quick. So, but they work great. Like the return's fabulous. It's just, it's very time consuming to keep up on that treadmill of creativity. So that's where I think the agencies that either have in-house capability or partner with the right people have a really distinct edge, because that's what's going to keep them fresh. And I think things like stories, you know, for those of us that are, you know, number nerds, it's even harder, because now you're dealing with like, you know, landscape versus portrait and vertical, and you know, how it's cropped and the stickers they have, and you can have polls and different fonts and different color. Like it's just, it's crazy. So it's like, you know, I kind of tend to be both left and right brain, so I can get my way through it. But I feel for my friends that are really media centric people, because they're like, do I need to put stickers on stuff? This is taking me forever. Oh, wow. They just want to push stuff out and get results. So I think that's going to be a major differentiating factor of a lot of agencies as we go forward.
And that's the difference, is that you got to specialize in those particular platforms, but you still have to be able to try to translate what you're doing into UTM so you can actually feed data back to these other platforms. Now, you're not going to be seeing you know, stickers show up on the LinkedIn ads. Yeah, we get that.
Correct.
But I mean, there's this construct that you have to start building for this interrelationship between ad platforms. So you talk about compelling engagements. I want to ask one quick question. Do you think that there is the factor of negative brand experience for users that are seeing the poorly developed ads or the poorly executed ads in context of all the other ads that they're seeing? Do you actually think that these brands can also run the risk of just nosediving if they're not maturing and being agile about their creative?
Yeah, I think more often, though, it's you see it as the advertiser with just declining engagement. You know, I don't know that people necessarily take the time to, usually the negative comments you see are because they don't like the brand or they feel like the copy's manipulative. Like, it's usually something directly about that, as opposed to feeling like it's just a rehash of something else.
Right.
But where you will see that happening is when you look at things like your engagement rate. And, you know, Facebook has this stuff that tells you, like, you know, how you're doing versus the average when it comes to engagement or return or that kind of stuff.
Right.
So I think those are really good quality indicators for, am I just screwing this up? Is it, you know, am I not hitting the mark? If you know how to read those metrics, and kind of like you and I said, is the creative doing what it's supposed to be doing, is really the question. If it's not, something's off. You know, it's like either your messaging's wrong, the visuals aren't compelling. I think that's where you see that data come back to you.
So it's not really, they're not flying, they're playing to a cliff, but, or to a wall, but at the same time, if they're not paying attention to the data, then those are kind of more softer signals from the consumers.
Yeah, you'll see reach drop. You know, if it's not doing well, it's like usually you'll spike out after 2 to 3 days, and then it's just like not, sometimes it just won't even spend the budget, or you'll look and see where it's serving it, and you can kind of tell it's serving it in like remnant inventory in the in-stream ads. Like, you kind of tell you're not getting, like, you know, filet mignon placement, if you see that happening. So there's signals like that that you really have to look for.
Got it. Circling back around, you're talking about the funnel and the Facebook funnel. You also opened up the entire concept of the cold, warm, and hot lead generation. Well, the cold and warm are rarely getting the due focus that they deserve. Can you expand upon that just a little bit?
Yeah. So, you know, I think a lot of times, and I see it in so many accounts I go into, where they'll be targeting what they believe to be cold traffic. But when you look at it, and they'll be like, oh, this one's doing so great, we're getting this great return. And you go in and you see that they have not excluded remarketing audiences. So the first thing I'll say is, okay, we need to exclude everybody that's visited your site in the past 30 days. We'll still target them, but they're going to be in a separate group.
Yep.
And then once they do that, they see that they're actually getting like no sales from the top of funnel
right.
effort.
It's like, we talked about nepotism a little bit earlier, literally. Oh, wow. That's
So it's, and, you know, I think some agencies probably do that knowingly. Sometimes it's just a genuinely, like, it's someone that's running it that doesn't know, you know? So it's like, and it's not something that would occur to you. And Facebook certainly doesn't like encourage you to separate them because it makes them look amazing. Mm-hmm. But the thing that's, it's always good though, is even though it's like a painful thing to go through, it illustrates to people, like resets those expectations, because you're showing that, like, look, no, you're not getting a 5X return from cold traffic. You are getting it from remarketing, which is not a bad thing, because it means that you are selling something that they want. But what it does mean is that, A, we have to get that brand awareness to be cheaper. Like, we don't want to be paying a $15 CPM to talk to people that don't know who we are. Right. I want to be paying $5. I don't want to be paying $15. So it enables you to have that conversation. So it's kind of like a painful lesson at first, but then it's like, the good news is you have something that someone is buying, you know, and when you follow up with them, they do buy it. So there's nothing wrong with the conversion piece,
right?
But it's just that you're always going to have a limited audience if you're not refilling the top of the funnel with the right people.
You're dealing with tainted data at that point in time.
And you're not looking at what you think you're looking at.
You can't steer from that. So it's better to have non-transactional data, clean lines to be able to try out and test your message, because otherwise you're never going to get out of your own echo chamber. right?
Exactly. And that's also the problem that I run into is people are like, I can't scale. And I'm like, because the bottom of your funnel is finite. You know, unless you make the bottom of that funnel larger, you're always going to be stuck with the same, you know, 3% conversion rate, and your audience is only this big. So it's only ever going to be that many people, unless you're taking some of that and refunneling it to the top. And that's usually the part that's hardest for people, because there's that waiting period again, where they're like, well, you should just be able to put money in and I got results. And it's like, well, we're still doing that, but these are the results that are going to bake and come out 2 weeks from now. So there's managing that expectation of like, yes, we are deliberately spending this money top of funnel, not expecting it to convert today. That's still very hard for people. And I think some of that's just also left over from the paid search culture. That was really the first paid media that existed. Like, they're just used to bottom of funnel. That's what just, you know, people are very accustomed to that.
But it's very, very rudimentary concept. And we're in a much more mature environment. The tools are there. The machine learning's there. Yeah. Like I said, you gotta get your scientist hat on and get in there. Yeah. And on top of that, the C-level has to appreciate that next level of complexity, because that's when you're really tracking with that consumer all the way through. So do you have any favorite tracking tools, UTM tracking tools, as well as behavior modeling tools that you'd love to share with our audience?
I hate to be one of those people to like plug our own agency, but we actually build all that custom. Because we have a data scientist, we have a dev group that's all they do. They build amazing reporting. We use Looker to build all our reporting, so we can literally plug into any API. But what we found is that, you know, we looked at a lot of the standard platforms, and a lot of them don't do that cross-channel analysis very well. Like, they'll report on each channel, and you can combine all your paid media and see like your overall ROAS and all that stuff, but it doesn't really give you a lot of information. And we have, you know, we have ones that aren't, you know, D2C, where the buying cycle is so much longer. So like long-term enterprise sale B2B SaaS, they're like 8 months, 10 months to buy. So just relying on the tools that were out there just doesn't get us there. So, you know, we've done a lot of like modeling off of, you know, Salesforce, understanding how long it takes to get from lead to MQL, MQL to SQL by each product line, and backing that into the math to figure out like, okay, it might take 8 months, but we have now, you know, we have the math to know that way back in the beginning, this is how much we can afford to pay for a lead. But we never found a platform that did that well. So we just build it ourselves. And it's so different for every client that we were like, one size fits all. We can't use the same thing for like a B2C as we could for like an 8 month sale B2B. You know, we just couldn't find anything that did all those things. And we service clients from all over like that. So we just wound up kind of building our own team. And that's really where we pushed our chips in the middle of the table, that and creative, because we're like, those are the two areas that we constantly see problems with. That's always where the gaps are when we take over accounts.
That's interesting. We're hearing that more and more as we interview different marketers such as yourself, is that, and we've known that for a while, there's only so far that these tools can take us until, and then you're actually building your own recipe of how you do your marketing, how you do your data tracking. So you can still get a good feed from these tools, but when it gets down to it, you're going to have to build your own to be able to.
Yeah, you wind up having to customize it. And I mean, for a while when I was a consultant, I used AdStage, and they're fantastic. I really loved them for the work I had, and for what they do great. And they're starting to integrate a lot of those capabilities where you can have like a customized setup where, you know, they'll work with you on that. So I think that tools are starting to come around, but I empathize, because it's not something that's easily scalable. And for a lot of them, it has to be something that serves the majority, that's going to be scalable as more platforms and stuff come on. And it's, you know, when you have to make it that specific to a client, it's not something that I think that they necessarily want to get into, because it's just not going to be profitable for them.
Nope.
So I empathize. Like, I understand why there's not a one size fits all tool, but I think it definitely puts the pressure on agencies to be like, you got to step it up, and you can't just be, you know, adjusting bids and expect to grow a humongous agency at this point.
No. And on top of that, you have an agency that does that has to invest in the ongoing learning of the platforms that are constantly changing out there, you know, and so there's that other factor, is that you can build something and all of a sudden a lot of the attribution falls apart because the model's different, or they've removed certain data sets. So you have to keep on looking back.
Kind of like we were talking about before, where it's important that like us as media people also recognize that ultimately we are marketers and we have to think that way. it's kind of becoming the same way with data, where, and even developers, where before it was kind of like there were the marketers that would request what they wanted, and then, you know, the dev team would build it, and the marketers are like, that's not at all what I had in mind. So there's also this issue, and we've seen this even in the platforms, like with Facebook, like you can very clearly tell what was built by a developer
right.
and was not thought through from a UX person or a marketing person. But I think we're starting to ask the same things of the data scientists that we deal with, where it's like, okay, you just gave me all the statistical analysis, but I need to know what that means from a, how we need to pivot their marketing. Right. You know, it's like, what does the data say about, you know, if this is the conclusion, what should we be doing differently? What should we double down on? And I feel like that's one of the hardest things to find right now is you can find devs that are really great, but you almost always have to have someone that can be a liaison between the marketing and the dev people. We're lucky in that we focus on having, you know, marketing analysts, people that have moved into those roles. So they understand what we're trying to accomplish.
Got it.
But it can be very hard. I see it in-house a lot with clients where they have, you know, a dev group and then the marketing group, and they just never seem to speak the same language. And I think it just makes all that attribution stuff and all these disparate channels, it makes it even harder to get them to work together because it's tied together by coding that, you know, is understood by people that don't do marketing. So it's kind of this weird, you have like four different islands getting together, trying to negotiate language. It's really difficult.
That's so disheartening too, because I mean, we were talking about this 15 years ago that creative and data had to work together, and we're still, come on, just force them into the room to get along.
We've gotten closer, but it's just, I think it's still going to be a continuing evolution.
Okay. Well, Susan, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for unpacking a good deal of your presentation. And I hope you found value in kind of exploring a good deal more of this conversation. I know our listeners certainly do. So to wrap up, what final thoughts would you give to the social advertiser, explicitly the Facebook social advertiser, and what they're trying to do for their organization?
I would say if they don't regularly talk to the other paid channels, I would challenge them to set up at least a once a month meeting where they're coming together and just comparing what's working, what's not working. If they aren't utilizing each other's UTM tags, start doing that. It's, you know, you're going to learn so much more from each other, and you're going to put together such a better picture for the direction that the brand is going. So I would challenge them, if that's not happening in your organization, be the person to spearhead it, because you'll be so glad you did.
Amen to that. Amen to that. All right. So I got to ask you, wrapping up here, always ask two questions. I asked it last year whenever we talked. What really bugs you about your industry right now?
I feel like the part that bugs me is everybody knows that they have to think more about attribution. And they're like, yes, we're going to build a brand. We're going to build a brand. But then at the end of the day, they still hyper-focus on what were today's results. And the media buyers tend to not correct them. It's like they immediately get knee-jerk responsive and they're like, oh my gosh, the client's upset because the ROAS wasn't there. And I'm like, part of your job is to help educate them on what they do need to focus on, because a year from now, they're going to look up, realize they have no brand and that they can't compete anymore. And you're not doing them any favors. So I think there's just this temptation to kind of like do whatever the client needs. And of course it's important, but it's also like, we're also being hired because we know how this stuff works. So you have to educate them. So I wish that there was more education going on in the bigger picture.
Oh, you're certainly doing that for us. So keep the fires burning on that.
I don't know how effective it is, but I do my best.
Well, I mean, we got to put the show right in front of these decision makers and say, hey, grow up a little bit. It's not about that ROAS. It's not about the return on investment. Right now, you're buying data to learn. All right. Yep. So conversely, what excites you about your industry right now?
I love the fact that I feel like we have to get back to being marketers. For a while, it just kind of felt like it was that magic money machine jackpot game. And I think the people that are truly marketers enjoy the challenges that we're going into now, because this is the stuff that we really love. Like, we really love to build brands. We like to build longevity. We're not day traders. So I think for those of us that went into marketing because we, you know, are enthralled by brand stories and, you know, what consumers respond to and connecting with consumers and businesses. I think this is like the best time to be in digital marketing because we're not as siloed as we were, and there's a recognition that we shouldn't be. So that's the part that makes me the happiest right now.
Very cool. Well said. Speaking of, well, speaking here, you've actually spoken and taught at 10 different conferences from February to June this year.
I know. I have like 8 more in the fall too.
Are you like a glutton for punishment? What's going on?
I don't know. It was just like one of those years where everyone's like, hey, do you want to? And they're all conferences I love, and I have a hard time saying no. So I was like, yeah, sure. And then by a couple weeks ago, I'm like, what am I doing? I have been living on an airplane. So yeah, I'm off for the summer. I'm going to take some trips, some fun trips as opposed to conference trips. So it'll be a nice break.
Absolutely. But we certainly recommend if you want to catch Susan in action, she's always on the SMX circuit, and there's a lot of good conferences she's going to. And we certainly appreciate your contribution into the marketing ecosystem, because we need that education. We need that knowledge. We need, the mucksters here. we can't do the wash, rinse, and repeat of marketing whenever there's so much to learn from the data that we're getting. So
yeah, and I figure that's the best I can do, is I'm like, here's what I know and here's what I've learned. And your mileage may vary, but it's stuff that's worth looking at.
Very good. Well, certainly want to have our audience follow you on Twitter, Susan E. Dub, on LinkedIn, Susan Winograd, and on Instagram, Susan Winograd. We thank you very much for your time today, and we're certainly going to be coming across. We'd love to have you back as well, talking about different things.
Always willing to come back. You guys are my favorite, so I'll come back anytime.
Thanks so much. All right.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome. So that's a wrap for Edge of the Web. So thank you so much for listening. Be sure to rate us, like us, give us some feedback on how we're doing on the show, because that's how we succeed in the annals of iTunes and podcasting. So give us a little bit of feedback. Be sure to join the newsletter and let us know how we're doing on that front as well. We're going to be talking to a good number of advertisers and marketers here in the future. And if you want us to talk to somebody who you'd like to hear from, just let us know. Drop us a note, and we'll certainly track them down. Thanks to all of our colleagues at Site Strategics for producing this on a regular basis, especially our guest, Susan Winograd. So you got to check out all the must-see videos. And on top of that, we're breaking all the news items into the individual news segments and news items. So if you want a quick consumable, go over to YouTube and grab a hold of those. And we're certainly socializing that, getting that out into the platform. So make sure that you know that we're trying to meet your needs as our consumers as well. So with that, thanks so much for listening and watching. Check out everything over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. We'll talk to you next week. Do not be a piece of cyber driftwood. Bye-bye.